The biggest one financially that we have had is the software. Because of our multiple locations, purchase orders were placed through a group that is in a state where the software licensing is taxable, but probably 98% of the licenses were actually in states that we have a large presence where those same licenses were non-taxable.
Welcome to the Ultimate Supplier Management Podcast from Apex Analytics. This is an audio version of a recent webinar we had with Alex Meyer. He is the Director of Shared Service Operations at CommScope. And during this episode, he discusses the benefits they had from doing both an accounts payable recovery audit and a sales and use tax audit. Since this was a webinar, there are slides that can be downloaded in the episode notes. With that, enjoy the show.
Welcome everyone for joining the webinar today. Today's presentation, it's really a story, an M&A story, an M&A success story. To be more accurate, it's kind of a reverse M&A success story where the acquired business brought a best practice to the acquirer, a best practice that's now been adopted enterprise-wide. And the companies involved are CommScope, which acquired Aeris. And to tell the story today is Alex Meyer, Director of Shared Services for CommScope. I'm Danny Thompson, and I spend my time at Apex working with clients to understand what their needs are and then take that insight into our products and then reflect that what our products are doing back to the marketplace. And real thrill for me is to get to work with folks like you and like you, Alex. So welcome. Just a quick background for anyone who may not be familiar with Apex Analytics. Over 250 Fortune 500 and Global 2000 companies and their private counterparts protect over $6.7 trillion in spend each year using Apex Analytics software services and our supplier insights. Really going from left to right, we've been performing recovery audits for over 30 years. And again, this year, Apex performed more commercial AP recovery audits than any provider in the world. The software and analytics that we use in recovery audits is called First Strike. And we make that software available to our clients who want to run their own AP audits and try to catch overpayments before they go out the door. Last year, clients using First Strike caught over $2 billion in overpayments that slipped through the cracks of their normal ERP controls. And looking at it in terms of spend, that's about $2 million in payment errors for every $1 billion in spend. Apex Portal is the highest rated supplier-facing supplier relationship and risk management solution on the market. Clients use Apex Portal to fully automate supplier onboarding, ensuring the accuracy of their data, preventing fraud, enforcing compliance, and managing risk. The portal also improves supplier collaboration because it gives them a central supplier hub for suppliers to access invoice and payment information, maybe request early payments, and then access the end-to-end P2P ecosystem that the supplier needs to engage with. Smart VM is a foundation for all of these solutions, and it's also the fastest way to improve vendor master data. It combines a proprietary database of golden records that Apex has of over 55 million suppliers doing business with the Global 2000 and real-time integration with over 850 external data sources that are used to validate and enrich supplier records and predict supplier behavior. With that, I'll turn it over to Alex to tell us a bit about CommScope.
Good afternoon. Thanks, everyone, for joining and appreciate the opportunity to speak to you all about the experience we've had at CommScope. Probably the first question most people have about CommScope is, what is CommScope? And the fun fact is, if you've If you're connected to your mobile device on a daily basis, you're probably using our equipment without even realizing it because we are 100% business to business. CommScope is a global provider of essential infrastructure solutions for wireless, business enterprise, residential broadband networks. We have solutions for wired and wireless networks that enable high bandwidth video and voice applications. Our global position is built upon innovative technology, broad solution offerings, and really high quality and cost effective customer solutions. We also have a global manufacturing and distribution scale. Major customers that you probably have heard of are Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, Spectrum, British Telecom, Comcast, Orange, other large providers that are in the telecom business. We are a Fortune 500 company, approximately 25,000 people with a comprehensive portfolio of applications that span all ranges of business from commerce, entertainment, medical, data centers, all sorts of solutions that are related to telecom. $800 million in annual R&D. We've developed about 15,000 patents and have some of the highest performing solutions. And we do operate responsibly and sustainably. We have more than 10,000 partners worldwide, and our revenue in 2020 was $8.4 billion in net sales. So pretty sizable company. AP operations, we have three primary shared service centers around the globe, thousands of active suppliers, 1.1 million invoices processed annually. Our direct spend is right at $1.9 billion, and our indirect spend is about $1.4 billion. Just to give some scope to what we do. Together, we were able to respond to our customers, and just looking at our scope of operations and geography here, you have manufacturing, distribution, and design centers around the world. There are different products located regionally and developed globally that support and reach those customers. We also have significant operations around the world to try to reach more customers and more talent at the same time. Having some resilience and stability as it relates to economic and technical headwinds by being spread out globally. CommScope has primarily developed our portfolio over the last 20 years through mergers and acquisitions, and that's a big focus of the discussion today and in our latest acquisition. A little bit about myself. I've been director of operations accounting, was what I joined the company as in 2015. And I had a heavy focus on standardization and lean and process development in the factories. In 2020, I was assigned to the director of shared service operations with that same focus on standardization, process improvement, and cost reduction, really based on lean principles and best practices. Got quite a background in different Fortune 500 companies, International Paper, Conagra Foods, Precision Cast Parts, Ingersoll Rand, and former military officer. And probably the only fun fact that's kind of unique is my son got me into bowling, and we actually finished in the 16th place at the USBC National Tournament in Las Vegas last summer. So enjoy doing that with him, and enjoy spending some family time. I'm sure all of you do as well.
Another little fun fact, maybe it's not that fun, but Alex and I discovered that we were at International Paper at the same time for about 5 years overlap in Memphis, back when I was attached to shared services. And you were working, was it in finance at that time, Alex?
Yeah, I was with the bleach board division. I was the supervisor of cost accounting there. So that overlap extended because my former boss actually worked with you in the shared service center. So
yeah.
So it's a small world at times.
Yeah, sure is.
But what really, I guess, got the invitation or why I'm sharing with you today is when we purchased Aeris in 2019, we had struggles in implementing a shared service model. We had some standardization, some regional pockets of shared services, but not nearly the level of standardization that Aeris had, and we had acquired them. And another thing that we had noticed was that they were performing these AP audits and having good results with recoveries. And I don't think anybody that has an opportunity to look at best practices wouldn't look at that, even though we were the purchaser, not the purchasee in that case. But we took a serious look at what they were doing with Apex on the legacy Aeris side, and it kind of came about almost by accident when we started merging the process and consolidating the shared services from CommScope into the shared services with Aeris. So the big thing that we discovered from my viewpoint was there's just an opportunity to standardize and use tools at the same time when you go through an acquisition. I think everybody's aware that there's always key people that are lost and you have constrained resources and you're also trying to pay for the acquisition by leaning out the organization. So having a third party, what I told everyone is have a third party do a free discount double check on, have we missed something here on the legacy CommScope side? So we've implemented those same AP audits. At the same time, we've always had issues with sales and use tax audits. It's hard to maintain compliance, even with the best software. And those sales tax audits had been on the horizon. Another person that I work with closely, Beverly Kerrigan, would be much more of an expert to talk about the sales and use tax side, but it was an area that we wanted to explore. And once we implemented the audit on the legacy CommScope side and saw the results that I'll share with you here later in the presentation, it was decided that it would be an opportunity to continue to leverage Apex's capabilities, partner with them, and have them take a good look at our sales and use tax process. There's been quite an amount of discovered recoveries. Obviously, our long-term goal is to improve our internal processes so these gaps and these opportunities that Apex finds actually go away over time.
Yeah, compliments to you, Alex, and the team. Sales and use taxes. Something that lots of companies overlook, or maybe they don't see the opportunity for, but it's a pretty easy addition to an AP recovery audit because you have the transaction data and there can be a lot of hidden errors there where invoices get sales tax and then companies accrue and pay use tax and other errors that could happen. So good for you guys that you took that extra step and think it's paid off for you.
Yeah, I mean, a specific example of that is with software licensing on the sales and use tax side. We have, with the help of Apex, identified a pretty large recovery where the licenses were actually deployed in one state that doesn't tax software licenses, but they were purchased in a state that does, and we had paid the tax to the state that we purchased the licenses in rather than the state that we actually consumed the licenses. And I don't know that we would have found that on our own. So that's one good example. And that was a fairly large recovery that's still in process. Of course, you have to work with local jurisdiction to get the actual recovery since the tax was already paid, but that's in process. But just identifying those opportunities on the sales and use tax side has been helpful to us. And it also allows us to go back to the procurement team and take a look at what could we do on our process side to make sure that we don't set up purchase orders incorrectly and we don't have those escapes in the first place. So it's all about process improvement and trying to identify areas where, one or two large recoveries may point to a gap in your day-to-day process of purchasing and or paying on the AP side. So that's just something to throw in there. Just brief overview of kind of our recovery audit findings and the process improvements. I know I've talked a bit about it here, but with the Aeris side, what we've seen as the audits have gone on, their first year, I believe, was 3 years ago, which was prior to the acquisition, and they found significantly more items in that recovery audit than they did in year two and year three. And the major thing that they're finding today, since they have been able to use this tool for a few years now, is real estate that's managed by a third party. So that one specific item really is the only thing they found, and the recoveries are fairly small at this point in time. And what we're hoping to do with CommScope in our first year is, you can see the recoveries to date in 2020 is just under $500,000. And we've got another $100,000 out there that are pending approvals from various vendors. Our thought is that as we take a look at those duplicate payments primarily and inconsistent invoice coding, that we can start to drive those numbers significantly down when we do our 2021 recovery audit. And we are planning to do that as well. But these identification items, number one, there's a significant recovery and a financial benefit to the company. But number two, My goal is to, over time, use the discount double check to get that number as close to zero as possible, even though we would continue at this point. Our plan is to continue with Apex. So I would just say that extending this audit from the legacy Aeris business into the legacy CommScope platform. And one thing that should be mentioned here too, Aeris is operating in Oracle and single ERP in Oracle, and we're operating in a single ERP in SAP, and we're getting ready to transition that next year. So having a standardized process between the two companies, as well as a third-party partner that knows both systems, has been very helpful.
You know, you kind of have a couple of unique findings here where you've had a lot of recoveries focused on one or two suppliers. And while we do see that from time to time, or every once in a while, you'll see a large dollar, you know, $1 million invoice that got paid twice on the same day. Most of the time, what we see with clients is their experiences that the overpayments are spread more evenly across vendors, but they do tend to focus around specific process errors or control gaps that can be identified and are highlighted at the end of the audit. And we work with you to identify things you could do to tighten that control or eliminate it altogether to get to that goal that you were just talking about, Alex, of getting to no recoveries. But things continue to change in organizations, which always creates more opportunities for overpayments.
We continue to grow, and when we have frequently done this through acquisition, and having a standardized model, ultimately all in one ERP is going to help us to have that standardized process, but also have a partner in Apex that allows us to review some of these things and make sure that we're continuing to get best practices as the organization changes, as you have turnover. There's all sorts of constant change at all companies at this level. I mean, you've got the great resignation going on. A lot of us are losing key people and losing them to competitors. And the key for having a robust process is going to be having standardization and simplification and AI where possible, and some of the tools that we are able to employ or learn about ourselves to make us better are going to, in my opinion, make it much easier to stay current with best practices. And you don't always know what you don't know until somebody shows you a better way. And that's kind of how I feel about this. We were really not doing this. We'd looked at it a few different times with other vendors in the past, but had never really deployed it within CommScope. So once we've deployed it and seen the benefit to us, I think we'll continue to do it until we drive those numbers as close to zero as we can. The control gaps is really what we're about now, is trying to identify those. I expect that the 2021 recovery audit will identify and recover less than the 2020 audit. And I hope that by implementing best practices, that, as I said before, we ultimately get to a point where, you know, Apex services are more of a free cursory look and we don't really find much of anything, but that we're doing our job well and doing it right the first time. I don't know, yeah. Danny, if you want to comment on that.
Yeah. That's kind of the beauty of a contingency-based audit, is if the auditor doesn't find anything, then you don't pay. And things with the insights into control gaps, the amount recovered over time should go down. One thing that you mentioned is there's constant change. And specifically, you talked about the ERP consolidation. That reminded me of this theme we see across all companies when they're implementing new technology or processes. And that's when something's changing like that, just more errors slip through the cracks. And for example, if you're migrating from one ERP to another, there will be invoices that get processed on the old ERP and then get re-entered in the new ERP. Even though you're making a change for the better, errors occur. And having analytics that kind of combine data across multiple ERPs really makes a difference. Just reminded me of an example that we call the deployment spike. And this is not an example from CommScope, but I want to tell you about something that happened with another big brand that you would all recognize, but I will remain anonymous for their protection. And this company made a really good change for the better because they implemented an e-invoicing solution. And in this case, it was Coupa. They were doing P2P automation. And, you know, we see those sorts of implementations as some of the best things you can do to prevent duplicate payments and other sorts of payment errors, implementing automation so that you can standardize and narrow the channels and just improve real-time collaboration. But what we see is that during the time of the conversion, overpayments increase even when you're making a good move. In the case of an e-invoicing solution, suppliers, if they're converting to e-invoicing from paper or PDF, until they gain confidence with the new invoicing method, they also send the invoice using their old invoicing method. Anytime you have the same invoice being sent through two different channels, it has a much higher chance of being paid twice by accident. In the example here, again, not CommScope, but another big company, during the four-month Coupa rollout, there was a 300% increase in overpayments. We even found times where a single invoice was paid six times. Just thinking about that, a single invoice paid six times, but in the confusion of the conversion, things occurred. Another startling example of this is a client who moved from an on-premise ERP to a cloud instance of that ERP, and they had a duplicate payment spike of 1,600% in 1 month. Fortunately, they were using our First Strike software, which, you know, catches those things in real time. So they caught all of those before the payments went out the door. But just that transition is a pretty scary period from an overpayments perspective. You know, it's just sort of important to understand this inevitability when you're going into any sort of automation project or any other real change in process or ERP migration or transition to shared services. We recommend, rather than running an annual or a biannual retrospective audit, we recommend running a rolling 90-day statement review so that all overpayments are getting caught as close to the payment date as possible, which stops money from being unrecoverable farther down the line. I also wanted to just take a minute to talk some more about the sales and use tax review. And again, compliment you guys at CommScope because you had the insight to take advantage of the sales and use tax audit. It's really easy for us to add that into our recovery audit scope. You know, lots of companies have internal tax systems that they use to help them stay on top of tax issues, issues like Vertex and other solutions. And they put a lot of faith in those systems. Those are good systems. But just like with e-invoicing and P2P automation solutions, errors can sometimes slip through the cracks of those solutions. And the safe thing to do is to do what you suggested, Alex, which is include just a second pass audit. It's fully contingent based. So if nothing's found, you don't have anything to pay, but you come away with the confidence that you haven't made overpayment errors related to sales and use tax and everything's working the way it should. The CommScope, you don't have an internal tax system like that. And so you did what a lot of companies do around recovery audit. You use the recovery audit itself to determine where you've got a big problem and to determine whether that problem warrants an investment in an automated solution. And that's what clients are doing even in the other areas. They determine whether they need a solution like First Strike to stay on top of overpayments day in and day out by performing a recovery audit up front. And sometimes they actually use the recoveries that occur in either the overpayment audit, sales and use tax audit, to fund the technology investment that they might need to stay on top of those issues on an ongoing basis.
That's exactly this issue with the sales and use tax automation or investment that has been a perpetual sticking point. And the recoveries that have been identified are significant enough, approaching $1 million, that now, because of that, we're finally getting the attention of senior management to put in a front-end tool. So without the sales and use tax review, I don't know that those discussions would have gone any further than they have in the past. So not only do we get the benefit of recovering the taxes that were identified, we're also getting attention of the C-suite that, yeah, maybe ignoring this and not having a tool in place to prevent this in the first place probably worth the investment to take a look at it. And then we would partner that with a back-end review with Apex to make sure we didn't miss anything and that the system that, whatever system it is that Beverly decides to invest in, you know, once it's funded, that it's working properly. So just thought I'd throw that in there as well.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. I thought I'd just drop in two other slides that give you case studies around sales and use tax for a couple of other companies. First is a $20 billion technology company, and they had $3 million that they had paid the sales tax on the invoice, and then they also accrued use tax and paid use tax directly to the states. So it was a single purchase. They essentially double paid their sales tax, and we discovered that through a sales and use tax audit and recovered that for that company. And then the next slide is a use case with a $3 billion office equipment manufacturer. And in that case, we recovered $1.5 million. They had paid tax on non-taxable software, very similar to the scenario that you were describing earlier, Alex. You know, each state, they've got different sales tax rules for software, so it can be tricky. Having an auditor looking at these things, someone who's got experience with sales and use tax and the rules in all the different states can really help and identify and resolve these sorts of discrepancies. So with that, Alex, close us out with three major takeaways from the presentation.
What I would say, and I think I probably, you know, intermingled it throughout the presentation, is that, you know, we're using this audit as a best practice to identify the gaps and making sure that we are paying suppliers and taxing authorities appropriately, but not overpaying them. The second value on the sales and use tax side, especially, is we all know how expensive it is when a state or a jurisdiction finds something on an audit that they have driven. We end up having, you know, fines and interest from that if it's significant enough and you're not able to mitigate it at all. So we really are very interested in preventing. We want to pay appropriately, but we don't want to overpay. But at the same time, we don't want to underpay and end up with a problem that would include fines, interest, and bad exposure. We are a publicly traded company, and that's never a good thing either. And our biggest thing that we're seeing, because we've done so much M&A and ERP migration, is what you talked about, is Danny, related to the spikes. When you are constantly changing systems, or we did go from SAP to the SAP cloud environment at the same time we're trying to fold in Oracle from the Oracle cloud environment into SAP. So there's multiple moving parts. And when you're shifting even regionally from one system to another on small bits and pieces as you do your transition, there's going to be overpayments, and we definitely want to avoid that as we have one more big transition coming in August of 2022. So our hope is going forward that, as I said in the beginning, and I was joking around with Matt when we were preparing for this, is that, you know, our goal is to make sure we ultimately unemploy Apex financially, but we stay partnered with them as a discount double check. So, you know, using the State Farm analogy and Aaron Rodgers, we want them to do a discount double check and be our partner, but we hope that they don't find much during those audits.
Really love working with folks like you, Alex, and the team at CommScope. It's fun to try and find where these errors are happening and how can we work together to prevent them going forward. It feels like a victory, which is always rewarding. So with that, I think we're going to shift to Q&A. Anyone who's on the webinar today that has a question, feel free to raise it. And as your questions come in, you should be seeing a poll. We just use this opportunity to give you the chance to request any additional information around Apex white papers and research and products. If you want some more information about any of these interesting topics, then just complete the poll and otherwise submit your questions, and we're ready to take those questions now.
Indeed, we're going to enter the Q&A portion of this webinar. If you haven't already submitted your question for Danny or Alex, or if you thought of an additional question for Danny or Alex, go ahead, use the chat button top of your screen to submit them to me now. We'll answer as many questions as time allows. Our first question is from Raquel. She wants to know, what steps have you taken to prevent duplicate payments to suppliers?
The biggest thing that we've done internally is we've centralized the operation. My first assignment, we had Rest of World Shared Services, and we were located in about 13 different countries. We've consolidated that down into 3 at the same time. We've built a very large team in our shared service environment in Goa that had very good processes, and that location did not have the overpayment. So what we tried to do is use the best practices from those to, as we folded in the smaller locations that were doing payments, we would drive to standardization and documentation. It's amazing how you can have different regions using the same system in 2 completely different ways and not have maybe the oversight and the double checks of the approvals prior to payment release. And some of that was just the size of the operation was such where some people were probably doing more than they should have and should have had a second level of approval. Certainly, you look at segregation of duties and you have to have that implemented within the system. Some of the smaller systems that weren't in our main ERP from acquired companies had that issue as well. But we looked at the standardization within SAP and Oracle and coming up with one best practice and implementing it globally.
So Sheila wants to know more about the credits that your audit recovery turned up.
We went back further in time as well. Probably on the 2020 audit, I believe we included 2019 data, and we did find that there were people that were not best practice, and documented practice was we should be working the statements monthly and following up on credits that should have been issued but were requested. So there was many times that there were RMAs, there were credits that were posted in the system that were left unprocessed because somebody left the company and it got lost in the queue. I know that sounds crazy, but when somebody leaves and it sits in their approval queue and nobody's working the statements, then you miss those credits and they sit out there for a very long time. When you do a full reconciliation of that statement with the vendor and request it, we were able to recover those. So that would probably be the single biggest example I have. And if you noticed, most of our recoveries were around a handful of vendors. Another thing that we also saw with those vendors is that some of those vendors had their own turnover. So we would request the credit, maybe not get a response, and then the follow-up internally wasn't as strong as it should have been, but that's been rectified at this point.
Alex Michael wants to know whether you've automated your invoice processing.
We have to a great degree. We have a VIM system and we just enhanced that. We went live vendor invoice management system upgrade that was just actually put in place last weekend on the 5th, 6th, and 7th. So that was a big part of also trying to get more automation to do the work to make sure that the 3-way match that's already built into SAP and Oracle, the front-end system, the vendor invoice management system is used to as a screening tool to make sure we don't duplicate invoices. I fully expect the 2021 number to be way down from what the 2020 number was. The 2020 number, like I said, included 2019 and also an acquisition. So there was a lot of change going on internally to CompScope in those 2 years.
Yeah, Tinder writes, how is invoice coding causing duplicate payments?
I can just tell you about the things that we see most often. Mm-hmm. The source of all of this is that the ERPs, and I'll just take SAP for example, have duplicate controls and other controls like 3-way matching and approvals of invoices, maybe in workflow solutions. But things slip through the cracks for a few reasons. One is that in SAP, the duplicate control requires that 7 fields match exactly. So if 2 invoices are entered and the company code and currency and invoice number and invoice date and invoice amount and a few other fields are all exactly the same, then it throws up a warning. But if you put an A at the end of the invoice number, then it slips through the control. Or if you post the same invoice in 2 different company codes, or maybe to 2 related vendor IDs that aren't the exact same vendor ID, then the payment goes on through. Now, you could say, well, what happens then? Shouldn't somebody be approving that invoice? But you know how it goes. You send an approval request to somebody in the business, and they go, I thought I approved this invoice yesterday. These folks in AP are don't know what they're doing, and they hit approve again. So, you know, those are just a couple of examples. And even when you have a really robust, say, three-way matching solution in place, you can get into a cycle where the second invoice is consuming a later goods receipt, and it's not until maybe a blanket order is fully used up before that duplicate payment is identified, and it might be too late to recover the money at that point. So those are just a few examples.
And here's a follow-up question from someone else. They want to know whether you've automated any technology to help with your invoice coding.
Well, the solution we're putting in is buying and invoicing on the front end, and on the back end, we are still using a VIM solution, but we're looking at a lot of different automation at this point. And this may sound bad, but I'll just be honest. I'm a very transparent person. The reason I'm in this role is we had an unexpected resignation in April, and I'm still learning on the fly. So I'm not the AP expert globally. I'm not the global process owner, but she does report to me. We've got about four projects over the next year, all driven around automation, standardization, and tightening down all of our processes, in addition to folding the Oracle ERP into SAP to get us to the point where I would like to be, which is we just don't have any gaps in any way, shape, or form on the three-way match. When Danny mentioned the blanket POs, I'll tell you what I know historically from being in the operation. We did not have a lot of discipline around the procurement system, so blanket POs were left open early and often, and they weren't closed at period end, at year end, like they should have been, with a new blanket PO being opened in the following year. Some basic blocking and tackling that you would probably want to see in any system was not in place in our system. So full disclosure, there was a lot of room for growth. And also full disclosure, I'm still in that phase where I'm learning all those gaps and all those specifics where you would think that the recoveries may be significant. But when you look at the fact that we're processing over $3 billion in payments and over a two-year period, the recoveries are around $500,000. These gaps are not, you don't want to have them, but they are not routinely happening with hundreds and hundreds of invoices or repetitively happening outside of a handful of vendors that we've seen so far with the audits on the AP side.
Danny, next question's for you. One of our attendees wants to know, who's typically managing a 90-day statement review? AP, audit, someone else, all over the map?
It's usually a collaboration between Apex and the AP team. Or if you're managing it internally, then sometimes it's a combination of maybe an accounts payables controls team, or sometimes an outsourcing company might be involved in running it at Genpact or somebody like that. But typically, it's being run out of AP most times.
Alex Lorraine wants to know, what are the most common problems your audit tools turned up with sales and use tax?
The biggest one financially that we have had is the software. Because of our multiple locations, purchase orders were placed through a group that is in a state where the software licensing is taxable, but probably 98% of the licenses were actually in states that we have a large presence where those same licenses were non-taxable. As far as the other issues that we found with sales and use tax audits, I'd have to defer to Beverly on that one. And quite honestly, I'll be full disclosure and I'll throw her out there. She's in Portugal right now on vacation, so I wish I was there after that question. But anyway, I'm kidding with you. I do wish I was in Portugal, but that's a fair question. But the details of the sales and use tax audit, she's a peer of mine. She runs the receivables and that whole side of things with sales and use tax. And she's coordinating the audit with a different set of people. And I haven't seen the full results of those audits. And they just started it, but that was the big one that I was aware of when she and I talked before she went on vacation.
Well, Danny, since you're still stateside, what would you say are the most common problems that typically turn up with sales and use tax in some of your engagements?
They typically fall into a couple of categories. One is that the tax is being paid to the wrong state. So we talked about a scenario like that. Another is sales tax and use tax both being paid on the same invoice. And then thirdly, the wrong rate being applied for the item that's being taxed. Those are the ones that we see most often.
Alex, another question from you from an attendee. They want to know, what changes and controls have you already made since starting work with Apex? And what changes and controls are you planning to make?
We're trying to go to automated controls fully through that. What we've done in lieu of that is our menu selection as far as segregations of duties was reviewed thoroughly, and you know, a process was put in place where those segregations of duties, as we consolidated positions into the shared service environment from the actual operations themselves, where we did have some local people involved. That is probably the single biggest enhancement that we made, was ensuring those internal segregations of duties within the systems would stop or prevent the overpayment or duplicate payment of items simply by having a second level review internally before any payments were released.
Alex, this next question is also for you, and I sense a tinge of jealousy. The attendee wants to know, how do you free up AP resources to conduct these audits, assist with merger activities, and do an ERP migration and still get your day-to-day work done?
Well, that's a fair question. I think that when you're in an M&A environment, it moves pretty quickly. One thing that I believe helped is we had some knowledge that we benefited from that we bought when we acquired Aeris. They had been through this before, so maybe the learning curve wasn't as steep as we implemented that. But clearly what happens as you go into these audits, having a partner that led it, I would say, you know, one of our biggest assets was Beth, who I've worked with extensively on the AP side, Beth Mano, that's Apex, that their team did as much as they possibly could to set us up for success. And we coordinated, but primarily the audit was ran by the Apex team in background so we could continue to do our day-to-day job and continue to focus on what we needed to do in the current year rather than looking at the past history. So that's been my experience with it. As far as the resources go, we've actually reduced resources significantly as we've gone to the shared service model. So it is a challenge balancing it. You have to have support from your senior leadership if you're going to be successful.
Lisa wants to know, do you use a payment manager system for check, ACH, wire payments? And is it separate or part of your AP automation system?
It's all embedded in AP within SAP. So we do have a payment system and a cash management system, but that's all run through AP and SAP on our side. The Oracle side, to be frank with you, I'm not sure the payment management system, the Taiwan Shared Service Center that was already in existence when we purchased Aeris, is still running that process. And that particular group doesn't report into me.
Danny, a question for you. Brenda writes, I understand that you said when you're a non-tax state and you order from a tax state that you have to pay taxes. What happens if you're in a tax state ordering from a non-tax state?
Most taxes are about use. And so most of the time, if you're in a state that taxes, they don't care whether you purchase the item in-state or you purchase the item from outside the state. If you're using it in the state that has tax, then you owe tax. But you don't owe it to the state that you purchase from. You owe it from the state that you're using the good or service in. So what you can expect is if you're in a state that taxes, whether the state you bought it from or not taxes really doesn't matter.
A couple of attendees have asked where your team is working, Alex.
My team is working right now. I've got three pockets. One is in Reynosa, Mexico. One is in Buenos Aires, Argentina. The other is in Goa, India. Those are the three teams that are working on the SAP side. We have a fourth team that's in Taiwan, but we will be moving to the model of ultimately three teams. And then I have one person in the U.S. that's the global process owner for accounts payable. That's the key go-to person coordinating all this activity on behalf of the company to try to implement the strategy.
Jonathan wants to know, so how responsive have your suppliers been to these audits?
That varies. We had about a 90% response rate of the vendors that we purchased more than $1 million from. As you get into it. There are some that are much more receptive. There are others that will say, we're not sending anything to a third party unless we hear from somebody internally. Well, we set up the Apex team with CommScope email addresses and sent out letters in advance of any audit to let them know that, you know, they should work directly with those representatives and send the statements and any documentation that they're requesting to the CommScope email address. And that resolved a lot of the issues as far as gathering the data to get the data to fully reconcile and take a look at it audit-wise. I think that has worked and probably been one thing that really cleaned it up. Certainly, there are other vendors that just basically say no, or they just are non-responsive. And we maintained our system pretty well as far as contacts and follow-up. And when the Apex team gets nowhere with it, we have regional leads in each region that will contact those suppliers directly that may have a better relationship, either from the procurement side or from the AP side. And generally, we're able to get those statements. But we don't have 100%, but we're north of 95% response on both audits at this point in time on the AP side.
Danny, one of our attendees wants to know, so what's the process to gather data required for an audit?
We tend to need vendor master data and invoice transaction data for the audit period. And we have standard integration that we can use to pull data from the major ERP systems and a standard format as well that data can be shared. But we also know that audits, as one of the questions earlier suggested, aren't people's day jobs. And so we can really just take the data in any format and map it to the data format that we use in our auditing software. So it's really just a matter of the client engaging their IT resources if needed, just to get the data out in whatever format they can. And we can help with that with our standard connectors where appropriate.
Alex, one of our attendees wants to know how much time these audits have added to your AP team's daily workload.
It's very little. We do a biweekly call. And that's where we do the problem resolution. And if there's vendors that are key, large vendors that we are not getting cooperation from as far as the statements, that is one part of it. The other part of it is in those calls with the Apex team. They usually last 30 minutes early on. They were lasting about an hour biweekly. And it was more to gather the data. And then it becomes a partnership with them to reach out to those suppliers that we're not getting cooperation from, or to actually talk with the team about, was this a recovery that we already had identified prior to the audit? That is one thing I'll compliment Apex on too, is that we've had a few of those where we had things caught up in our workflow, and just like the spike graph that you saw, they were sending out inquiries at the same time we already had processing going on in our system. And due to the overlap, every single time that we've showed that, hey, we contacted this vendor 30 days before the audit started and it was stuck in our workflow, Apex has agreed that that was not a recovery of theirs, but it was a recovery of ours, and we were not paying any fees on that. So I think it's less than what you'd expect. It's certainly less than what I've expected as far as having to be involved. They do a lot. They do almost all the blocking and tackling once you've given them the data they need to use their tools. And then it's minimal, and it's really related to getting vendor cooperation or agreement on whose recovery it was. Was it an internal recovery or was it an Apex recovery for billing purposes? So we've had one person in the U.S. and one person in Taiwan that has had to spend a few hours a week, honestly, doing all the audits that have been done since I've been involved.
Alex, what would be your single biggest piece of advice to your peers on the line or considering embarking upon an audit recovery?
My viewpoint was, you know, with resources being constrained, if you're looking to improve or looking for best practice, or even we're all looking to improve the bottom line, I would engage Apex and try to use and leverage that resource to help you with your recoveries and your process improvements. It's opened my eyes to several things that I don't know that we would have found internally without the third-party partnership with Apex.
Same question to you, but I want a different answer, Danny. What would be the single biggest piece of advice you'd give to the folks listening on the line who are considering embarking upon an audit?
I mean, I would say especially if you've had a change in the last 2 years. And that's kind of now I think everybody's had a pretty significant change in the last 2 years. It's really time to get on with it. So it's really time to get on with it. I mean, because the longer you wait, the less recoverable these errors are. So it's just really not a reason not to go ahead and do it, because we try to do all of the heavy lifting for you.
Alex, Danny, thank you so much for an excellent presentation and for sharing your insights with us.